Welcome to Mentoring Moments. Mentoring Moments is a sub-series of the E-Commerce Edge podcast. It is composed of clips taken from Jason's one-to-one and group mentorship sessions. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the pod. It is my absolute pleasure to welcome Justin Irvine from The Aggregate Co. to the podcast. Welcome, Justin.
Good.
I tell you, I've had a few on recently, and it has been amazing. I tell you, some of these boys that are spread themselves out across the globe, have some of the guys with apps that are actually based here in Mexico, have someone else who's based in Oz, have just met people like from all over the world. Kiwis really are putting their stamp on the e-commerce space, and it's really amazing to see. And people that maybe cut their teeth in ANZ, and then they've spread their wings. In theory, Kiwis can't fly, but in my experience, Kiwis do a lot of flying. They get across the world, and I tell you, they're bringing their unique brand of innovation to the e-commerce space. And I think, you know, after having lived in New Zealand for almost 30 years, for me, Kiwis have always managed to find a way to do more with less. And maybe that's because of the remoteness of the country. Maybe that's because we live in the shadow of our big brother, Australia. Maybe that's because of the pioneering spirit of how New Zealand was founded. And it was basically effectively settled by farmers that had to make do with what they could basically make themselves or import themselves into New Zealand. I don't know exactly what it is, but definitely that head down, bum up sense of, I just need to get stuck in and do some work and make an impact. I'm seeing Kiwis spread that brand of effort and number eight wire mentality across the rest of the world. It's pretty exciting to see.
Yeah, no one else in the world will understand what we're talking about with number eight wire, but it's absolutely that secret sauce that Kiwis have, where they have this inept ability to just be able to take on the world, make innovative decisions. And I think that's a big thing with Kiwis, is we're not afraid to make a decision. If we've got good data and a good understanding of what we're doing, we will make a decision. We'll just get after it. And I think our belief in the fact that we can execute is also huge. I think Kiwis are just born with this mentality of just really believing that we can. And it's exciting. I love taking that New Zealand brand around the world. And as much as my Australian business partners in the past and my Australian clients get, I think, a little bit sick of hearing about how great Kiwis are, I'm very proud of it. So it's exciting to take that. And like both of us, we go around the world and share that passion and that can-do sort of attitude with the rest of the world. So this is definitely very cool.
It is. And I tell you, man, when I see the odd Kiwi, even in Mexico, or I hear that, or I hear the Kiwi accent, or even if I hear the Aussie accent, it's that Antipodean accent. And it really stands out because, man, I tell you, Kiwis are spread reasonably thin around the world. They congregate in specific places, particularly Australia. They love Australia, of course. But the reality is that we definitely do still stand out around the rest of the world. And it is very exciting to see. And look, I think if I look back across my career, and We're gonna turn you into a bit of a guest mentor today, because I think that your experience in logistics, specifically around e-commerce logistics, is something that my audience will benefit massively from, and so will I, frankly. But as somebody who's worked in the logistics game for a very long time, you probably know better than most that e-commerce is largely logistics with a pretty face slapped onto it that customers can engage with. And if you can't get that, if you cannot nail logistics, you will never be able to be efficient or profitable enough to make a sustainable business. It is pretty much that simple. And whether you own your own warehouse and then, you know, you integrate with local carriers through something like Starship It or Ship It, whether you are completely outsourcing to a 3PL, whether you are doing some combination of the above, whether you have your own vehicles, whether you use that in combination with someone else's vehicles for the last mile delivery, regardless of how you slice it or dice it, logistics is very much make or break for e-commerce. And particularly where I think where some brands come unstuck is when they get into a specific vertical or a specific category of products, they don't necessarily think about the impact of those products on logistics, or logistics on the impact of being able to sell those products profitably. I remember when I started my very first e-commerce pure play, we were selling memory cards for cameras and cell phones, et cetera. And those could go in a DLE pouch with New Zealand Post, and they could go pretty much anywhere in a DLE pouch. But I'm dealing with a lot of brands that are selling very large, even if they're not massively heavy products, They're oftentimes volumetrically massive. And so therefore, the logistics costs are massive. And so managing that, whether you need to be in a mix of standardized road carriers, bulk haulage carriers, which oftentimes don't even have APIs for you to integrate with, this space, not only is it dynamic, but it's a little bit insane. Because as I understand it, a lot of the players in the space, whether they're brokers, whether they're actually carriers, et cetera, the margins are pretty damn thin. And I think you experienced that at Seiko Logistics, which is where I first met you, learned about you, understood what you did in the game. It's a hard space to be in, but you seem to keep going back into the logistics space. So what is it about logistics that gets you so excited?
Jeez, that's actually a bit of a tough question, to be honest. I think, in all honesty, and it's how can you get romantic about logistics, right? It's not a very sexy thing. We talked about it before, even though I think Jeff Kai and I coined up sexy logistics back in 2011, 2012, when we first kicked off. It was always a bit of a joke. But there is an element of the way that it's just constantly evolving. And so a lot of brands in their evolution of their business and in e-commerce in general, you see a lot of these, the way that tech stacks have changed, the introduction of AI, the way that technology as a general has evolved. Logistics is constantly evolving as well. It just doesn't feel like it in Australia, for example. Now you've got Australia Post and Toll, and that's about it. That's the perception that people have. In fact, in behind the scenes, there is an enormous amount of evolution. There's a constant evolution of technology that kind of binds all of that together. And most importantly, the logistics, as you said, is such a crucial part of e-commerce that you are basically bound into the growth journey and or the hardships and all the wins of your customers as part of what you do for them. To be passionate about logistics, and I think last year was 30 years in freight, straight out of high school, didn't know any different. And it's funny how people that get into freight never leave freight. I think it's that constant, fast-paced approach where every day is different. You've always got some new challenge or problem. And so people that kind of stay in freight, you're either in and out in 2 years or you're in it for the long haul because you get addicted to this constant evolution and change and challenges. And that, for me, is a part and parcel of why I love doing what I'm doing. But the biggest part is actually seeing people succeed and evolve and hit goals as far as their business is concerned. So where can we get involved and kick off a product or a service or break down barriers to growth in the UK or the EU or continue to just smash it into the US, deal with the very tough complexities of very localized tax rules in Canada. Just that evolution and taking them from one step to the next step to the next step is also a big part of it. We went on big growth journeys with the likes of Booktopia, Kogan, growing up with the likes of Shopo and Hello Molly, Princess Polly and the AKA brand group, just watching that evolution and being part of that journey as they went through that with all of the different brands that we're involved with is incredible. Like experiences you have and the things that you get to do and the places you get to go being part of that was also really cool. I don't think that logistics locations are as sexy as Beverly Hills. Quite often going to Chino, if everyone's people that have been to LA and been.
I'm extremely familiar growing up in Southern California. Chino is a hub of logistics in Southern California. It doesn't sound very sexy, but man, I tell you, there are some gigantic warehouses out there.
Yeah, and it is what it is. Possibly the worst location to put e-commerce goods in the US because of the population dispersions, but I won't get into that. And funny you bring up South Cal is we were Hermosa Beach boys for pretty much 10 years. So when we were in the States living per se in place in LA, we were Hermosa Beach boys. Definitely South Bay is the closest thing to Australia and New Zealand we could get in Los Angeles, which is quite different than the econ brands who would all head up to West Hollywood and Beverly Hills to experience the brand and the experience of running e-commerce in the US. Yeah, it's just logistics is just a constant evolution. It's constantly changing. And I think, like we talked about it a little bit earlier, is that I think people are finally seeing, especially with Amazon coming into Australia and seeing what customer experience really looks like at its optimal from a logistics perspective. And we include like final mile in that. So the delivery, that's all part and parcel of the logistics package that we're talking about. But, you know, with Amazon coming into the Australian market, I think people are finally understanding that you spend millions and millions of dollars and hire a ton of overhead and money spent with agencies to bring people in the top part of the funnel. And then they get them on the cart and they get them to hit spend. And then everything from the cart onwards is basically set and forget. There's a few companies that are constantly looking at their data, and they're the ones that are really doing well, the ones that are really driving profitability, because you can burn a ton of cash without even knowing it on that final mile and then returns coming back. And returns is a whole kettle of fish by itself. But you can just set and forget. That's the mentality in a lot of companies that we work with. And it's not their fault. They don't understand it. They're going to go with what they see as best practice. I'm seeing Wes and Era, Princess Polly just killing it. I'm just going to copy what they do. Or, hey, Jane at Shopo, Jane's chosen to do this setup. That looks cool. I'm going to go with that. And to be fair, like when we were at Seeco, when we signed Jane with Alex Durka and Paul Waddy, and we signed up their international freight, I think we had 8 companies contact us in a week. Hey, I see you're doing Shopo. Like, and so there's a lot of that mentality of kind of follow the leader. And when
FOMO.
Businesses get to 20 to 50 million. Yeah. When you get to 20 to 50 million in turnover by doing that, that's okay. But then you're also probably leaving $500,000 to $1 million in additional freight costs because you haven't really optimized that situation off your EBIT. You're basically your net, this is your net profit is just sitting there ready to access if you get some guidance and understand it. But it's also, you can't be too hard on founders. A lot of them have, Jane did, started up her business in her garage, evolved into the next step. And I remember meeting with her in her first office in the city. And then it's the next step, 3PL, bring it back in, do it yourself, evolve. And each time the business is getting bigger, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're bringing in people with a post-purchase expertise there's a little bit of a gap in Australia, if I'm being honest. There's not so much in the US. There's a lot of very smart people. And there are a few smart people in Australia, but not to a level where you can, like a couple of thousand companies in Australia have really strong logistics and parcel people working in their business. Like the skill set's just not there. And so when we walk in and we start talking to people now about their parcel and how we can optimize it, you see a lot of people's heads just drop and have I been leaving this money on the table? You haven't because you don't know. It's that phrase I hate using at the moment, but it's used everywhere and you don't know what you don't know. And it's actually really true. A lot of these people just haven't had the experience that we have or have people that have come out of our industry into their business to know what those levers are. To basically to be able to innovate, to be able to look at new ways of doing things, or even just manage the cost in the framework that they already have. I think you have seen a lot of it being up around the US and Mexico, where you've got FedEx and UPS and DHL all going for the same increase this year.
Yep.
Not sure how that
impossible. Impossible. Amazon is most likely going to actually be the biggest winner out of the whole lot.
Oh, absolutely. They're killing it. Australia Post has had their increases. Toll's had their TGE. They've had their increases. And I think people are starting to now evaluate, am I doing things in the best way? Is there a way in which I can look to innovate within what's available on Starship It and Ship It? Because that's the other caveat, right? We can come up with all these great ideas, but a lot of these companies have to lean on their tech stack as far as their WMS. PeopleVox is always a good solution. Since Evans is okay. There's a few others that are in the mix, but they're your usual suspects of PeopleVox plugging into Starship It or Ship It. What
yep.
within those constraints, what can we achieve? What innovation can we apply? And there's really cool stuff going on. There's a whole lot of carriers in the gig space, which is the likes of Sherpa, Zoom2U, GoPeople, Dragonfly.
Even Uber's getting in on the game now.
They are. Uber's getting well into the game with from store delivery. And that's another evolution that we can talk about in relation to how omnichannel is starting to really kick off. But where I'm seeing a lot of companies really succeed is they're starting to piece the puzzle together around ship from store, click and collect from store, all of the revenue opportunities that exist within that, then understanding that, hey, my carrier and my logistics platform is now driving more revenue to my stores. I'm getting people, I'm getting more boots on the ground in my stores. They're spending more while they're in there. And there's great systems like Browse where you can actually measure that performance. You can come in and you can use the likes of Uber. You can same day with Render. And we can start to piece all of those kind of puzzles together. And that's where I get passionate about it because there's an evolution. I'm starting to see all these cool little angles that we can take to grow. It's not, while freight logistics is probably number two or number three on your P&L as far as cost is concerned, it's also your biggest opportunity to go and acquire a customer and then to retain that customer. Are you spending millions getting them in the funnel, right? Let's say you're doing really well and it's a $30 cost of acquisition to get that unique visitor to come in. Are you actually using that $5 to $10 effectively to keep them on the hamster wheel for three, four, five more purchases? What does that customer lifetime value look like? Instead of trying to lowball the crap out of delivery and giving them a crap experience and then they never come back, are we actually using our spend more effectively? And I go back to Amazon. There's a reason that they are burning billions of dollars. You might know the number, but I know it's in the billions in the US alone by offering Amazon Prime. There is people just use Prime constantly. And I'm like, there is obviously a lot of people don't have the same war chest as Amazon, but the concept is still the same. If I get my customer on the hook and it's so compelling, my experience post-purchase, I delete, I got it the next day. Why would I ever go shop anywhere else? I just had an incredible...
Especially if it's free.
And it's about where we're at right now. Correct. Especially if it's free. I'm not a huge fan of free shipping and free returns. If I'm honest. It's probably... And I'm glad that a lot of big businesses are changing the strategy, right? We're seeing wholesale changes across the board from big name retailers going, you know what? If you want to return it, we're going to charge you for it.
At least the nominal value, right? It's not going to be free.
It's not going to be free. You're going to pay, might cost, you know, somewhere between $6 and $10, depending on who you are with Australia Post, to return that item from anywhere in Australia back to your hub. But realistically, if you can recover $2.95, $4.95, and you were giving away free returns, watch the needle move. If you're doing 5,000 returns, that's a lot of net profit in your back pocket. And I can tell you from the companies we've worked with, when we looked at conversion, it did not impact conversion.
Yeah.
And I think one of the benefits, because there's only a few, one of the benefits of being owned by private equity is that you learn very quickly about one percenters. A little bit
here,
a little bit there, a little bit here, a little bit there.
And death by a thousand cuts, right? Coming in.
It changes you as a person.
Sure does.
But yeah, you do learn some important governance, and you really do learn that there are a lot of little things you can do to make a huge, you know, come out the other end. And it's about just driving profitability back to owners. I see a lot of people like struggling, 2023 especially, right? 22, we're starting to see that
cracks in the veneer.
Way of calling it economic headwinds.
Yes.
And it's a global thing, right? And so we started to see that slow down. And last year, a lot of good friends in the industry, Mel Chair, Paul Waddy, all these people in the industry were talking about, hey, we've got to get our costs under control. And I think towards the end of the year, certainly we've noticed it now that everyone's had their Black Friday invoices come in from Post, from DHL Express, from whoever they're working with, and go, oh, that's more than I was expecting. And it's, we're now seeing, there's got to be disciplines. There's got to be ways in what you manage how you're dispatching, to your point about your big bulky clients. There are a number of people now specifically focused on delivering that kind of stuff. There's some great consultants out in that space to help customers like that. Some people like Mick Bunt that's come out of Winning Group. He's out there helping people getting their own networks up and running on Big and Bulky with his expertise. There's just an incredible ecosystem in Australia of phenomenal people that have these really strong skill sets to be able to help people out, and a great breadth of new carriers. There's two new cross-border carriers entering the Australian marketplace. We've been limited a little bit. Domestic carriers are coming up, connecting all the gig carriers together. Seco do that as part of their domestic strategy. And we're going to get to a point where we're going to look at what do I get for my money? It's not about just relationship anymore. It's I spend X with you. What do I get? What is that driving? Just quantify to me in dollars how this service is going to keep my customers happy and coming back for more. Because I've got them to the cart and I've given you my dollars and my delivery and my customer experience. How does that impact compared to everybody else? And I think Shipit have started to do some kind of benchmarking work around that. We've done that. We're benchmarking all carriers that we work with and assigning it against CRM noise, finance, transit performance, exceptions.
Returns.
Starting to get a good handle. Returns is a huge one. Australia lacks a little bit for that. We're our good friends at Happy Returns, and didn't they do well getting acquired by UPS recently? So big shout out to Andrew. Happy Returns is a good mate. And they've really evolved that customer experience. I look forward to them entering the Australian market, or someone entering the Australian market with that same kiosk, turn up, scan your QR code, check the items, instant refund. That's world class. That's some really cool stuff going on globally that I'd love to see into the Australian marketplace. I think, unfortunately, as with New Zealand, the numbers aren't here, right? That's the biggest reason why Kiwis get on a plane and take on the world is because that scale exists somewhere else. So I think, though, that sort of solution will work really well in Australia. They've got that density of populations, those 1,000 Meriton suites that are around Sydney and Melbourne now.
Correct.
You know, that population.
It's mental.
It's crazy. Like, mascots evolved from 15, 20 years ago. When you go to mascot, you're worrying about whether you're going to get stabbed during the night walking back to your sketchy hotel to an incredible little area around the airport. So, yeah, the evolution of Sydney.
That and King's Cross and a whole bunch of other places where you would historically maybe never have shown your face. And now they are highly dense population hubs. Sorry to interrupt. I really quite a specific thing that I'd love to get your thoughts on here. When you were running Seco, the reality is you guys had a big job in the sense that you actually had vehicles, you had fleets, you were physically moving parcels around. And that's a very expensive proposition, especially when you're having to compete with the likes of New Zealand Post and Oz Post and Amazon and everybody else. We're talking, it's the razor thinnest of margins. But now help me understand how you decided, okay, I'm going to go from moving stuff around because that still has to be done by somebody. And now I'm going to evolve into what the aggregate co is now. And I don't even fully appreciate or know or understand what the aggregate co brings to the table, because I'm still trying to figure out myself, okay, are these guys a 3PL? Are they a tech platform and analytics provider? Are they a consultancy, or are they all of the above to a degree? Are they a freight broker? Like, I'm literally trying to figure out what gaps, after running Seco for so long, what gaps did you see in the market that you said, hey, I'm not going to rebuild the equivalent of Seco again. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do something different because I think there are gaps here that my and my team's unique knowledge and experience, as you said, from high school onwards, that you've been living in the logistics game. What did you see as gaps in the market that you said, I'm going to hit that. I'm going to run at that? Because once you left Seco, you could have retired somewhere. You probably could have retired down here in Mexico and lived on margaritas for the rest of your life if you wanted to. But something pulled you back in. Something said, the door is always open, is all I got to say. Hey team, I have a big favor to ask you. Please pause this episode and send the link of this episode to someone you know that you think would enjoy this content. Really appreciate you spreading the word. This is how we grow. We're not a Joe Rogan. We don't have big, massive advertising budgets, but we absolutely want to grow. We want to get the learnings from all of these episodes out to as wide of an audience as possible, and we need your help to do it. Thank you, and now back to your listening.
really good questions. And the aggregate co is an interesting one because it's a gap between consultancy and digital agency. So we get involved in numerous facets of everything cart onwards. Our approach is, instead of smashing you with front costs or freight brokering, which we don't do. So we don't get involved in any kind of on-selling. We don't go and beat up the carriers. We're about fostering the ecosystem. So each retailer stands on their own 2 feet with the volumes. So the carriers appreciate that we're not taking $100 million of spend and then go and beat the crap out of them. Those kind of days are gone. They don't really deal a lot with that much anymore. And it's certainly not the way forward. So what we do is we walk into a business and we become almost business coaches in a lot of ways because of our expertise and how we have gone through. We all chucked in $1,600 each and we created a $100 million business at the end of it. That's bloody hard work I had here when we started that process. It is bloody hard, Jacker. And the aggregate co really is come in as management consultants and a lot of, if you were going to try and put some framing around it. And we take what we learned at Seco in relation to being a data-led organization, because that's how you move millions of parcels on razor-thin margins. Very low single-digit EBIT is not a great experience when you're a business owner. But it's the data-led, you've got to be touch-tight with everything. You've got to be so tight with your data management and understanding how it's working. That had to be a component of what we were going to do with the aggregate code, because we have to validate everything as well. It's not the gone are the days of, I feel like that's a good call. Let's just crack on and just see what happens. There's got to be hard numbers behind it, and we've got to measure and constantly evolve those results. And so what we do is we come in as consultants and we look top down. We get into the DNA of the business. That's the other thing with the structure we have with our clients is you can come in, create a whole lot of noise in 3 months, take a whole big upfront chunk and claim a whole lot of savings later on. What that doesn't do is doesn't resolve the same set and forget strategy. So what we do is we actually take what would be that upfront cost in 2 or 3 months. We push that out over a year and we stay in the business. So we're not saying, hey, let's create this set, forget, see you later. Also, we'll be sending you a check for percentage of savings as well. That we are more so around, let's just get that retainer in. We're in the business. You can take a breath. We'll take this stuff off your plate and we will basically upskill the team over the next year, evolve your team as we're going through that process. And it's cost down, growth up. So as you're growing off a lower cost structure, it's just year one is the hard work. Year two is where the savings on 30% growth is bananas. It's doubling, it's easily doubling year one savings just off that growth curve. Yeah, that's where we come in. And the stressful part is moving the parcels. Where we see the industry right now in Australia is that we didn't need to set up something new. All of the tools in the toolbox from a logistics ecosystem perspective are there. There are good domestic, great international, 2 service, 3 service levels everywhere. Returns providers, returns portals, companies that are coming in and starting to manage actually processing your return so that it turns up back into your own warehouse, data cleansed, all ready to rock and roll like your normal inbound shipments that you get from China or Bangladesh or India, wherever you're sourcing your goods from.
And locker right. networks. They're very mature in Australia now too, which it took a lot. I remember back in the day when Toll first launched their locker network, there's a few other guys in the space that were independent third-party parcel networks. Those have started to get their act together in Australia too. Maybe not quite to the level of, it's interesting because in many respects, the United States is far behind Australia when it comes to parcel networks, and New Zealand is even further behind that. And a lot of these big tech companies that are running these international parcel networks, they're learning a lot from the Australian market, because parcel networks were very early to the Australian space. I'm going back 15 years ago, and I remember these networks being set up. And even back into the Tamando days and logistics, there was a lot of major players in the early days of e-commerce logistics in Australia that were doing very innovative things, because our friends in North America didn't really have their shit together yet either. And so there was no one that we could possibly say that the UK was ahead of all of us, actually, from a logistics perspective. But the reality is we had to do a lot of work in ANZ across the logistics ecosystem as the growth of, and I don't remember the days, not only the growth of e-commerce, but the standardization of platforms like Magento back in the early days when it felt like every single merchant in the world of ANZ was running Magento. And so everybody was trying to build their integrations in with Magento. We weren't really thinking about the Shopify's and the big commerces of the world or any other platforms at that stage. It was we were building a very standardized ecosystem in ANZ for e-commerce and for logistics and the locally born tech companies that were supporting that growth. And so I think we had to develop something that was pretty bespoke for that part of the world.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're right in that, just going back to the UK and EU, I traveled in the very early days, like 2011, 2012, when we won all the Aussale traffic out of the UK. That was my first sort of time in the UK looking at e-commerce, where it was at. Hut Group had just started. Look at them now, multi-billion dollar business. And dealing with all of those companies and being across those with ASOS, you know, all the big players in the early days and all of the providers that were involved. And it gave us a really interesting snapshot to the future around cross-border and what that could look like, domestic product, you know, guys at Doddle and Asda. And it was just a ton of
Carrefour and just everybody was killing it.
Yeah, everyone was. And so taking that and moving it down to the market. And now we're starting to see the net result of some of those processes. But at the same time, there were some huge innovators. I remember very early days, maybe 2009, 2010, Jethro from the Nile was drop shipping. And it was like, what's that? Like, I had no concept. It was like, what is this black magic that you do, Jethro?
You don't have to hold stock. You don't hold inventory.
Like, what? How does this work? So I have a huge amount of time for Jethro. He's kind of in this early days around how he managed that from an international perspective. And you know, great to see them and today and still competing hard. And, you know, that kind of evolution in Australia in the early days was really interesting. We were lucky to be part of that sort of ride, that evolution of what good looked like by looking overseas, bringing it back home and really taking on board. And the thing that I really like with Australia and New Zealand is that founders would give it a go. If we came up with some solid data and some good information, that wrapping up a gumboot and attaching it to a brick and throwing it to New Zealand was the best process and we could display that, that'd absolutely give it a nudge. And so when we came back with all of these new products and new ways of doing things that were best practice everywhere else in the world, Australian New Zealand founders made decisions. They were like, this, yep, pricing looks good, service looks good, go and show them how it all works. Yep, great, okay, big names are doing this overseas. Yep, cool, done. And we did it and it worked because it worked everywhere else. So why wouldn't it work out of Australia? And even when we linked gig carriers together in the middle of 2020 and the pandemic, what kind of maniac starts up a national domestic network in Australia in the middle of a pandemic? Two thumbs, this guy. So between Kai, Jeff and I and an incredible team, we stood that up. And again, it's an evolution. We were looking at what technology was able to do from something that happened in the States 8 years prior with my good mate, Jonathan Briggs and the DHL Parcel Metro team. They started same day delivery and we were part of that. And we were flying freight into those networks from the UK and Australia and doing same day delivery as soon as the goods were cleared. And that was the light bulb moment for us. And we were like, just we can take on anything here. Anything's possible with the way that things are moving. And so I guess the biggest message out of all of this is that if we can continue to evolve the tech stack around purchase and post-purchase life and the ecosystem and fostering an ecosystem where people can start up companies off the back of a good idea and execute that. Let's continue to foster these new incoming companies into the mix in Australia, because ultimately what that's going to, and give them a shot. Like, seriously, there are a lot of really good new carriers coming into the play in Australia, especially. Give them a shot because these guys are going to be the next big part of your supply chain and customer experience. So yeah, it's a very exciting time. I get very passionate about it. Kai often says, how could you be so romantic about this? Oh man, we're doing some cool stuff.
I think your passion matches mine for e-commerce. And I think it takes those of us with either a few gray hairs or a few no hairs. And I think those of us that have been in this game for more than 20 years, and there's very few of us that can kind of hang our hat on that and say, look, we've lived this and breathed it. We've had the blood, sweat, and tears moments in this industry for over 20 years. There's not that many of us that can say that, especially in the ANZ region. It's a special place. It's a special community. Going to the conferences, speaking conferences, seeing people over and over again, maybe even seeing competitors or seeing allies and seeing rivals is probably a better term, because none of us hate each other. We all love each other. We want to support each other and help each other do better and be better and grow in our careers. But I want to respect your time. I know I've probably taken a little bit more of your time than what you had expected or what you had agreed to, and I super appreciate it. I guess I'd finish off with this. You've been working in this space for so damn long, and you have seen so many things go right, but so many things go wrong, especially when merchants take the wrong path. And sometimes, logistically, when they take a wrong path, it's hard and expensive to recover from, and sometimes they don't. And so whether the decision is, okay, I'm going to implement my own warehouse and I'm going to implement NetSuite and PeopleVox and I'm going to integrate that with a PIM and I'm going to integrate that with my website or whatever, or whether it's, hey, I'm going to outsource kind of everything to a 3PL that can even handle maybe even a 4PL where they're going to be handling my customer service, they're going to be handling my returns, they're going to be handling my dispatches, they're going to be handling the receipting of my goods in the first instance into my warehouse. And then I'm going to have to plumb their inventory numbers into my omnichannel system so that when I sell across the five channels I'm selling across, I know what inventory I have and where. And then when I want to auto ship from my 3PL and I have a store estate, now I need to be distributing not only to my web customers and getting orders into their hands, but I also now need to be distributing to my store estate because I'm going to use those for click and collect. Then I'm going to use those from ship from store and some permutation of the above. We're talking there can be an immense amount of complexity, but there's usually what I see, usually some core starting steps that brands have to go through. And even if they've got an owned warehouse, they don't usually start out with something like PeopleVox. We didn't. When I had my own e-commerce pure play, we had a carrier integration for the pick, pack, dispatch piece, but our warehouse was manually organized and pick, pack, and dispatch was manual. We would have the pick sheet. We would literally, and it was organized in a human understandable way. So we did not have chaotic put away or anything insane like that. We literally had it was either alphabetical by brand or by category of product so that you knew where you had to go and pick that item for that pick list. We'd walk out the warehouse. We go, oh, yep, need one of those, need one of those, need one of those, need one of those. Put those in a pouch, scan it. That would be part of the pick, pack, dispatch process, and the tracking number would go off to the customer. And that's how a lot of brands, even still to today, start. They don't have a formal WMS. They basically got something as simple as ship it or star ship it, where it can get the information in terms of the consignment into the carrier's hands. It can pull down, it can generate the address label so that they can stick it on the parcel and get it out the door. But it's still very much a manual operation. It requires a lot of human capital to make. And then usually when they grow a bit more, maybe they implement something like PeopleVox where it's got, they'll have automated pick lists and they'll have automatic pick to light and they'll have automatic routing through the warehouse. So they have to cover the smallest distance possible to get that pick list fulfilled into a cart, onto a carousel, into the packer's hands, etc. And I said all that to say that there's still some well-trodden paths that it feels like small, medium, and large retailers go through in their growth journey. And if you were advising someone who was, say, doing less than $10 million today in GMV, in sales, as let's say they're an omnichannel retailer, let's say they got two stores, and then what are the types of things that you would typically go in and spot straight away that you would say, you can be saving money here and you can be improving the customer experience at the same time? What are the mistakes retailers making over and over again?
It's a little bit of testing stuff. So there's typically what will be happening is that they've only got one carrier for domestic, one carrier for international. When you do that, you're actually stopping yourself from converting traffic. A lot of people will be like, I'm just going to use Australia Post and DHL Express. The biggest improvement you can make on international is adding a standard carrier. We had one client increase their UK and EU sales by 65% by simply turning on two services. Domestically in Australia, have two service providers, especially a same-day solution. If you've got two stores, so at 10 million, you're at a position where you can really get after it. You can really turn some big growth levers, especially when you've got a couple of stores. And if the stores are connected well to the online, so you've got that really slick online, offline connection, click and collect, give them vouchers to spend in store when they do click and collect because you're saving the delivery cost. Give it back to them. Give it back to them and they will spend more money in your stores. There's some really cool ways in which you can measure and manage that process now with some really good tech stacks. I would say that typically have a proper look at what your cost levers. Talk to your carrier account managers without us having to get involved around how can I be using all of the tools in the toolbox in relation to what they offer you as a service? Because often there's little tweaks that can really quite improve or additional services that they may not have brought up in initial conversations or you might not be using or know how to use well. The other one is digital. So without spamming them, make sure that the customer knows what's going on and have a really good branded SMS, like using Klaviyo Connector to say Starship It, that's triggering events. You've got a really great branded experience as far as communication. You're getting 80% open rates on shipping emails. You never get that with
any other emails,
right? Yeah, full stop. So you've got this enormous opportunity to push the brand, push new products, push new sales, whatever it is that you're trying to do to elevate revenue from the business. And then a great branded tracking portal, returns. There's some great portals that are available, but operationally, a lot of people get caught up on the UX. It's actually where you burn and churn cash is actually the operational side of things. So just have a look at best practice around that with international returns and just making sure you're recovering and tweaking your recovery. Because little tweaks here and there up, and then if you start to see conversion drop a little bit, then just bring it down a bit. It's a constant, it just constantly look at it. It's just the little things. But if you're turning over 10 million and you all of a sudden are just chipping away half a dozen to 10 one percenters, that's the difference between taking dividends and not taking dividends or reinvesting in the business, whatever it is that you want to do. Because a lot of businesses at 10 mil are cash funded or living off debtor financing.
Yeah.
So yep. If you can drag that cash back in the business, yeah, that's critical.
10% is $1 million. Nobody sneezes at $1 million worth of additional efficiency and cost savings or additional profitability effectively. So amazing stuff. Now, I always like to turn this over. One question, any question you like of me. I always like to flip the script and give the microphone over to my guest, Justin Irvine, now from Aggregate Co. What is your question for me today?
Question for you, sir, is how do you find working remotely from all the different locations around the world versus old school thinking of being in one place office? And how has that evolution changed your life?
Wow, such an amazing thing. We've been able to work remotely, I think, as an industry collectively in the e-commerce and digital space for many years, but it wasn't as accepted by clients as it is now. And what I mean by that is even 5 to 8 years ago, clients still had an expectation that at least once before they sign on the dotted line with you, you'd go and meet them in person, you'd shake their hand, they'd be able to eyeball you, you could sit down, you could make your pitch to them, and then they'd say, yep, you're somebody I want to work with. And I think that the biggest evolution is, especially since COVID, is that my clients have zero expectation that they will ever meet me in person. Now, luckily, I still, because of the amount of traveling I'm doing, I still probably get to see customers in person more now than I ever have before, but there's zero expectation that they will need it to see me in person to make a decision to work with me. That's one of the biggest changes. The other one is that for me and my wife in particular, I think we realized over the last year of traveling very extensively across Australia and trying to run a business and a content machine and everything else whilst on the road, that being on the road constantly without a significant base of operations is bloody difficult. It is just difficult, especially when you don't necessarily know exactly where you're going. You could be in an Airbnb or you could be staying in a nice hotel and they can tell you we've got amazing high-speed internet and then you get there and it's crap or it just drops out constantly. And so you try to plan ahead as best as you possibly can to make sure that you're going to places that will have that good internet connectivity. And it just sometimes doesn't measure up to what you'd expect. And unless you got a van or a vehicle that you're going to be living out of that you can have Star permanently attached to this vehicle where you can always have your own internet. You're at the mercy of where you're traveling a little bit. And so I think asking those questions and being very clear with the hosts and saying, we work online. This has to work and it has to be this minimum speed. Otherwise, we cannot stay with you. I think asking those questions up front and being very clear about the requirements that you have is super important. But I tell you, now that we've been in Puebla, we're coming into our second week here of being in Puebla, which is where we plan to stay long-term now in Mexico. We just renewed our temporary residency in here in Mexico for another 3 years. And it was just granted this morning before I jumped on the call with you. So we're very excited about that. And for us, we now realize that we need to have a happy medium between being on the road constantly and having a base of operations that we can shoot out from. So we're going to be based here in Puebla now. But for example, in February, I'm going on a big business trip to the United States for 15 days. We're going to go and see a client. We're going to go do a whole bunch of stuff. My wife's going to come with me. She's going to see parts of the state she's never seen before because she's never been to California before, so we're going to go there. But we have a base to come back to, and we like the fact that we have some kind of a base that we can call home for a period of time that we know we can guarantee we got good internet, we got everything else. That would be the thing that I've learned about being a digital nomad is that it looks glamorous on the surface, but man, it takes a lot of planning to do it right.
Yeah, absolutely. Being a bit of a gypsy myself over the last 10 years, so I totally get where you're coming from. Living in different time zones is also a great experience.
Yeah, not. Yeah, working at both ends of the day. And yeah, it's just amazing. Now, before you go, I'm going to put a link to your LinkedIn profile. I will also put a link to the aggregateco.com in the show notes. But if people want to get a hold of you and they want to have a chat about their logistics and how they can make dramatic improvements or just incremental improvements that add up to big improvements over time, how should they get a hold of you?
Yeah, easiest thing is just go to the website, theaggregateco.com. And just have a bit of a view of the kind of process we do. It's pretty straightforward about our approach and our mentality around how we do things. There's a little bit of commitment from Kai and I, and just go through the website. There's a contact form there, or just hit me up on LinkedIn. More than happy to receive either way.
Mate, so good chatting to you. It's been too long. This has been so enjoyable. I've learned a ton. I'm sure my audience has too. So I really appreciate it. I can't wait to speak to you again soon, my friend.
If you'd like to get mentored by Jason for free, head over to greenwoodconsulting.net, scroll to the bottom of the page, and click Get Mentored by Jason.